This is the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. OWL Radio broadcasts to homes in San Antonio, the Hill Country, San Antonio Methodist Hospitals, and via online streaming and smartphone access. You can also ask your Alexa device to enable and play OWL Radio. Welcome, I'm Martha Attee. Today's program is being recorded on February 7th, 2023. I will be reading from the Nutrition Action newsletter dated January-February issue 2023. The first thing I will read is a commentary from Peter G. Lurie, the president for Center for Science in the Public Interest. It's titled, Cashing In on COVID. As the saying goes, another day, another dollar. That's how people shilling for shady COVID-19 cures must view the pandemic. One day it's ivermectin, the next it's hydroxychloroquine, or colloidal silver. No stranger to the COVID-19 sweepstakes is the vitamin salesman Joseph Mercola. The New York Times referred to him as, quote, the most influential spreader of coronavirus misinformation online, and that was in 2021. In his subscription newsletter in September, Mercola wrote, quote, there is simply no question that vitamin D optimization is a crucial component of COVID-19 prevention and treatment. COVID claims have landed Mercola in hot water before. In 2021, the FDA warned him not to suggest that his vitamin D supplements could prevent or treat the virus. And YouTube banned him, in part for spreading misinformation about COVID vaccines. Mercola was so sure that vitamin D both prevents and treats COVID-19 that in September he wrote, quote, we do not actually need randomized control trials. Most of the evidence that Mercola cites comes from observational studies, which follow people and record their health outcomes. Those studies are useful, especially in exploring new hypotheses. But sorting out what causes what can be a real headache. For example, could vitamin D takers have milder COVID-19 infections because they're more likely to get vaccinated, have fewer health problems, or have better access to medical care? Researchers try to take those other ideas called confounders into account, but they can't adjust for unknown confounders. In contrast, in randomized controlled trials, people are randomly assigned to either a treatment like vitamin D or a control group. If the treatment outperforms the control group, it's likely that the treatment works. As it happens, Mercola's vitamin D article appeared the day before the results of two huge trials were released. Research in the United Kingdom and Norway had randomly assigned 40,000 volunteers to take vitamin D or not for 6 months. Different countries had the same result, which was vitamin D had no impact on COVID-19 risk. And in three other trials, vitamin D showed no clear benefit in treating COVID-19. Two more studies are on the way. For now, as the National Institutes of Health says, there is insufficient evidence for taking vitamin D to prevent or treat COVID-19. Of course, it's important to get enough vitamin D, especially for strong bones. But it would be folly to rely on the vitamin when we already have effective vaccines and treatments. Please don't let a misinformation super spreader convince you otherwise. And now the next article from the January-February Nutrition Action Newsletter. Cancer: How to Lower Your Risk, by Bonnie Liebman. Roughly 40% of cancers are preventable, say experts. That means avoiding tobacco and limiting excess weight, alcohol, inactivity, and an unhealthy diet. Here's what to know. Breast cancer. This is the number one cause of cancer in U.S. women. While the rate of new cases has crept up since the mid-2000s, deaths have dropped 40% since 1989. You have a higher risk if you are postmenopausal, have excess weight and you're postmenopausal, are sedentary, consume alcohol often, have a relative, especially mother, sister, or daughter, who was diagnosed with breast cancer, have the mutations in genes like BRCA1 and BRCA2 found in families with high rates of breast cancer, had menstrual periods that began before the age of 11 or menopause that began after the age of 55, had no children or were older than 30 when you had your first child, took estrogen and progestin after menopause. The risk of this diminishes when you stopped the hormones. Have breast dense tissue. Have abnormal breast cells, atypical hyperplasia, or ductal carcinoma in situ. About diet and exercise. You can't change your age, genes, or breast cells, but you can lower your risk. After menopause, women who have excess weight have a higher risk of breast cancer, says Heather Eliason, professor of nutrition and epidemiology at the Harvard Public Health School. Why is that? Estrogens are drivers of the most common type of breast cancer. After menopause, the ovaries no longer produce estrogen, but androgens continue to circulate and they get converted into estrogen in fat tissue. So the more weight a woman carries, the higher her circulating levels of estrogens. Exercise can help lower risk, and not just by keeping weight down. Physical activity may also lower risk by reducing high blood insulin levels and inflammation. Even brisk walking is beneficial. You don't have to run marathons. In contrast, alcohol increases risks even with quite low consumption levels. Compared to non-drinkers, women who have 3 to 7 drinks a week have a 10% higher risk, and those who have at least 2 drinks a day have a 30% higher risk. Alcohol may increase susceptibility to DNA damage, contribute to oxidative stress, and increase levels of estrogen. Carotenoid-rich green, orange, or red vegetables and fruit, on the other hand, may protect against breast cancer, even in women at high risk. The carotenoids are potent antioxidants, but other bioactive compounds in fruits and vegetables may also lower risk. Women who eat a diet rich in healthy plant foods, meaning whole grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts, legumes, vegetable oils, tea, and coffee, not unhealthy plant foods, which are fruit juices, sugary drinks, refined grains, potatoes, and sweets, have a lower risk, especially when it comes to tumors that are not driven by estrogen. And that matters because estrogen receptor negative tumors are more aggressive and harder to treat. Now on to colon and rectal. The good news, death rates from colorectal cancer have been cut in half since 1970, thanks largely to screening and better treatment. The bad news, death rates are rising in adults under 55. You have a higher risk if you are over 45, have excess weight, are sedentary, eat processed or red meats often, have two or more servings of alcohol a day, have a parent, brother, sister, or child who was diagnosed with colorectal cancer, have ever had colon polyps, have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, have type 2 diabetes, smoke tobacco. Amanda Cross, a professor of cancer epidemiology at the Imperial College London, says, "It's looking like at least half of all colorectal cancers can be prevented through lifestyle. Among the key culprits, excess weight, red and processed meats, alcohol, smoking, and inactivity." Cross's earlier work showed that feeding people red meat can create carcinogenic N-nitroso compounds in the gut. That was just one piece of evidence that led the International Agency for Research on Cancer to conclude that processed meats like bacon, ham, sausage, and lunch meats is a human carcinogen, while unprocessed red meat is a probable human carcinogen. Now there's a new clue. After analyzing tissue samples from 900 people with colorectal cancer, scientists have identified a distinct pattern of DNA damage known as alkylating mutational signature. Quote, "We found that the frequency of this alkylating signature was higher in tumor samples of patients with very high red and processed meat intake when compared to those with very low intake." This is from Kena Wu, principal research scientist at the Harvard School of Public Health, and it was reported in 2021. Those kinds of signatures are like fingerprints left by a criminal at a crime scene. Tobacco smoke, for example, has a distinct mutational signature. Meanwhile, scientists are scrambling to figure out why colorectal cancer is climbing in younger adults worldwide. That increase explains why experts are now recommend screening starting at age 45. You can choose from a stool detection kit, a CT scan, a colonoscopy, and others. Warning signs, diarrhea or constipation, feeling that your bowel doesn't empty completely, blood, which would be very dark blood in your stool, rectal bleeding, narrow stools, gas pains, cramps, feeling bloated, unintended weight loss, fatigue, and decreased appetite. Cancer of the esophagus. Since 2000, esophageal squamous cell cancer rates have been dropping, but rates of esophageal adenocarcinoma have not. The 5-year survival rate for both is at 20% and is dismal. You have a higher risk if you are over 55, have excess weight, are male, smoke or chew tobacco, have acid reflux or Barrett's esophagus, are a heavy drinker. What is the best way to cut your risk of both types of esophageal cancer? Number one is to stop smoking, says Christian Abnett, Chief of Metabolic Epidemiology at the National Cancer Institute. To dodge squamous cell cancers, avoid excess alcohol is also key. However, esophageal adenocarcinoma is now the more dominant type in the United States, and it's linked to excess weight. In heavier people, there may be more pressure on the esophageal sphincter, so it's more likely to be open and lead to reflux. And gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, G-E-R-D, may set the stage for cancer. The stomach contents are typically acidic and can contain digestive enzymes from the small bowel, says Abnett. The glandular cells in your stomach and colon are prepared for the exposure to these caustic agents, but the squamous cells in your esophagus are not. There will never be a full-scale trial, said Abnett. It would be very difficult to run a study on GERD because of the number of people with GERD is large, but the number of people who actually develop esophageal carcinoma is small, and that is good. The warning signs for esophageal cancers: painful or difficult swallowing, chest pain, unintended weight loss, hoarseness, coughing, vomiting, bone pain, and black stools. Liver cancer. Liver cancer cases tripled from 1980 to 2015, and death rates doubled over roughly the same time. Since then, both have stayed fairly stable. You have a higher risk for liver cancer if you have had chronic hepatitis B or C infection, have excess weight, have type 2 diabetes, are a heavy drinker, smoke tobacco. Increasingly, the most important risk factor for liver cancer is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, says Catherine McGlynn, senior investigator at the National Cancer Institute. One out of three U.S. adults has this. So the message is to maintain a reasonable weight, because when you have more body fat, you tend to get more fat deposition in the liver. And it's simply not weight, but waist circumference that matters. How does that lead to cancer? McGlynn says it's not well understood. How the hepatitis B virus can cause cancer is clearer. The virus integrates into the DNA of liver cells, where it can cause mutations that lead to cells to grow abnormally and uncontrollably. The hepatitis B vaccine has been a part of standard pediatric immunization since the 1980s, so we hope the viruses will go out of existence in the United States. Anyone under the age of 60 who is unvaccinated or over 60 with risks should also get the vaccine. There are no vaccines for hepatitis C, but it's curable. That's why the Center for Disease Control and Prevention advises all adults to get tested. The virus hasn't been in the blood supply since 1990, but there are some concerns because of the opioid epidemic. Exposure to hepatitis C goes up when people use intravenous drugs. Of course, excess alcohol consumption is a known cause of liver cancer. Whether it's alcohol, a virus, or fatty liver, all causes of liver cancer go through the same process. They damage the liver, and when the liver tries to repair and replace the damaged cells, scarring or fibrosis can result. Severe scarring is called cirrhosis. Some good news: coffee still looks promising. people who drink 3 to 4 cups a day have a lower risk of liver cancer. Studies also see lower risk in decaffeinated coffee, so it's not necessarily the caffeine. Warning signs: bulge or hard lump below the rib cage on the right side, abdominal pain or swelling, yellow skin or yellow whites of the eyes, loss of appetite, unintended weight loss, fever, nausea, vomiting. Now on to lung cancer. Lung cancer cases have been dropping since the mid-1980s in men and the mid-2000s in women. Yet it still kills far more Americans than any other cancer. It's not just lung cancer. Smoking boosts a risk of a dozen cancers, including mouth, throat, larynx, esophagus, pancreas, cervix, kidney, bladder, stomach, colon, and rectum, and liver, plus acute myeloid leukemia. But 20% of lung cancers strike people who never smoked. Why? Abnett says some are caused by secondhand smoke or radon. A greater fraction of lung cancers are now being diagnosed before they have spread. We now have good evidence that yearly screening with a low-dose CT scan can save lives, and it's covered by most health insurances. Screening is for people age 50 to 80 who smoked or have quit within the past 15 years and have a 20-pack-a-year smoking history. That is, they smoked 1 pack a day for 20 years or 2 packs a day for 10 years. And inhaling any smoke, including from marijuana, is likely to harm lungs. You're still getting tar and carbon monoxide. Some people may think that a water pipe filters the smoke. It doesn't. The pipe just cools the smoke so it's easier to hold in your lungs. That's probably making it worse, says Dr. Abnett. Warning signs include persistent cough, shortness of breath, chest pain, coughing up bloody mucus, hoarseness, and frequent lung infections like pneumonia. Pancreatic cancer. This accounts for just 3% of cancer diagnoses, but it is the number 4 cancer killer in both men and women because only 11% of patients survive for 5 years. You have a higher risk if you have a parent or sibling who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, have excess weight, have type 2 diabetes, smoke or chew tobacco, have had chronic pancreatitis. Pancreatic cancer is insidious because the pancreas can harbor a tumor that grows without any clue, says Professor Stamfer, a professor of epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health. There's no capsule around the organ itself, so cancer cells can easily spread. Once the cancer starts causing symptoms, life expectancy is fairly short. Why has the number of cases crept up since 2000? It's most likely due to weight gain because smoking is an established risk factor, and that's not going down. It's not just excess weight, but excess waste measurements that matter. In contrast, unintentional weight loss, as well as diabetes, may be also a sign of the disease. Warning signs for pancreatic cancer: abdominal pain that may radiate to the back, yellow skin and eyes, unintended weight loss, nausea, and vomiting. Prostate cancer. This is a common cancer, but the 5-year survival rate is close to 100%, except for men with distant stage cancer. Their survival rate drops to 31%, and the number of distant cancers is climbing. You have a higher risk if you are over age 50, have a father, brother, or son who was diagnosed with prostate cancer, or are of African ancestry. If you do random biopsies of older men, you'll find prostate cancer in about a third of them, says Dr. Stamfer. Treatment can lead to erectile dysfunction or urinary incontinence. That's one reason the U.S. Preventative Service Task Force recommends that men age 55 to 69 discuss the potential benefits and harms of getting a PSA test to find out if they might have prostate cancer. And doctors should not routinely screen men 70 years and older. What to know if you are on the fence? One has to break that automatic link between the high PSA and treatment. If your PSA is 1 at age 65, I would stop getting tested. You are not going to die of prostate cancer, says Dr. Stanford. And if your PSA is elevated, you might not need a biopsy right away. Inflammation can raise PSA levels. If you wait a few months, it might go down. Even if a biopsy finds cancer, that doesn't mean the cancer needs treatment. Most do not, but a biopsy can identify tumors that need treatment to avoid metastatic disease. Warning signs for prostate cancer: weak or interrupted urine flow, difficulty starting or stopping urine flow, need to urinate often, especially at night, sudden urge to urinate, blood in the urine, pain or burning with urination, and then pain in the back, hips, or ribs. Cancer of the ovary. Death rates have been inching down, but the 5-year survival rate is only 49%, largely because only 1 in 5 patients is diagnosed with this cancer before it has spread from the ovary. Oral contraceptives lower the risk of ovarian cancer. That's because they keep one from ovulating. When an egg bursts through the lining of the ovary, it goes into the fallopian tube, and that is accompanied by a bunch of inflammatory and growth factors, says Dr. Torger from the Tampa Cancer Center. The longer women are premenopausal, the more ovulations they have. If they're on oral contraceptives, or if they're pregnant, or if they're breastfeeding, all that suppresses ovulation. Warning signs for ovarian cancer: abdominal swelling, persistent bloating, pain in the abdomen, back, or pelvis, the need to urinate often or urgently, and feeling full quickly. Uterine cancer. The incidence of an aggressive type of uterine cancer has been increasing dramatically since the year 2000, especially in Black women. Its cause is a mystery. You have a higher risk if you have excess weight, are sedentary, started menopause after 55, took estrogen without progestin after menopause, have type 2 diabetes. Uterine cancer comes in two varieties: endometrioid and non-endometrioid. Non-endometrioid is the more aggressive, and it affects women of color disproportionately. Endometrioid cancers account for 75% of the cases. They're usually diagnosed at an early stage because of bleeding or spotting. And the 5-year survival rate is 92%. The most common risk factor for endometrioid cancer is obesity. Estrogen can be also made in fat cells, even when you're postmenopausal. To lower the risk, physical activity, even brisk walking, is beneficial. Warning signs are abnormal vaginal bleeding or spotting, discharge, pain during sex, pain while urinating or in the pelvic area. That is the end of the Healthy Living Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please call Al Radio at 210-829-4223. This is Martha Attee. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye from Al Radio.